Hello and a very good evening. My name's David Jay. It's the first Thursday of another month and it's time for On the Front Foot. That's Susie Radio's cricket chat show. Once again, I've got Tim Bowling and Chris Jacobs, and the three of us are going to have a general chat about the state of the game as the season gets underway. The league season locally gets underway this Saturday. And later on, we've got not two, but three guests on the show. Ben Gardner is coming in as a representative of the reincarnated, resurrected Wisden Cricket Monthly magazine. Our old friend and great supporter of Susie Radio, John Colcutt from Newdigate, will be with us in the second hour. And so will Laurie Nicholson, the new first-team captain, up the road from the studio at Merstham Cricket Club. Chris, hello.
Evening, how are we doing?
We're doing all right. And Tim, you've had yet another adventurous journey.
I think every time we do it on the front foot, there's traffic problems of some sort. I've just got here, so I'm here now, which is good.
It's been a real scramble to get here. Chris is with us for the first half hour. And just tell us very briefly, Chris, because we're not into personal stuff particularly, but just tell us briefly about your plans for America later in the year.
Oh, plans for America again. Yeah, I went out to America around this time last year, 2017, obviously that was the year, and I went up to the top of Long Island. I would fly over there and I'd work on a summer camp, coaching kids, either could be sports or looking after them on a week-by-week basis, and then it would change throughout the year. Then, well, summer, you'd have 5 weeks of overnight camp, 2 weeks of day camp, and then a couple of, like, clearing up weeks. So in total, you'd have 7 to 9 weeks on the camp, and then you get to do about 3-4 weeks travelling after before you have to come back in September.
And that's happening again?
It is. I'm flying out on the 11th of June, and they've given me head of sports and games this year.
Well done for that. That's excellent. We'll talk to you, if we may, a little bit on the club level about Epsom at a later stage. But, Tim, it's been a very, very wet April. The 2nd of May, 2 days ago, continued the trend. What do we make of the cricket in April in general and the way in which the championship just seems to be increasingly marginalised? It must have been a toss-up whether the pitches they've been playing on are any better than the road surfaces full of potholes.
Well, it's funny, really, because I was out in my garden last night doing a couple of bits and bobs, and it was so wet underfoot, unbelievable. And the weather we've had, I mean, we lurch from cold weather to rain to hot weather back to cold weather. It's just unbelievable. I mean, it must be making things very difficult for groundsmen to prepare pitches at club level and indeed at professional level. I noticed Nottinghamshire, I think, are top of the county championship at this point. You know, it is difficult. The Red Bull cricket is getting marginalised more. I mean, I'm sure we're going to talk about the 100 ball competition, which has been announced. But it to me, it's just very worrying that the Red Bull cricket seems to be getting pushed to the sidelines.
What do you reckon, Chris?
With the 100 ball game? The 100 ball game is, people are saying it's to bring families in. That's what 2020 was put together to do, eventually, after those original first few years of just giving it a bit of a bash around for a few hours, and then you'll be there, gone home, and then it'll be sorted. But then it was started bringing in the families, they started merchandising and marginalising it a little bit. But they're just trying to copy the IPL and the Big Bash, because their 2020's gone well. We've seen ours isn't on that level yet, so they're deciding, let's put this 100 ball game in, see if we can bring in families and basically bring more money into cricket. But it's going to confuse people, because you've got 15 six ball overs. I think that's simple enough, people know six balls in an over. If they get told it 20 overs, that's fine. Six ball overs for 15 overs, and then they'll go in the last 16th over. What, there's 10 in this one? 10.
Yeah, I think that there's quite a lot of strands to this 100 bow, aren't there? I saw an article the other day suggesting that the advent of the 100 would actually drive traditionalists to start defending traditional T20.
Well, yes, I mean, that I wouldn't be surprised. To be honest, when I read that they were going to launch this 100 ball game, It really did make me quite angry, because to me the only reason they've brought in this particular format is to try and differentiate from the county T20. Now, the ECB should have made a decision early on to have one T20 tournament. Now, either you stick with the county format or you stick with the city-based format. They've gone for both to try and make more money, and so they've had to try and differentiate this from the county format and come up with, for me, is absolutely ridiculous.
Why they've done that? They've done that because you've got the likes of, you want a city-based format, you've seen the success in the other two countries in particular of the IPL and the Big Bash, as I've said, and then you can, because these smaller counties, the problem is these smaller counties, the likes of Leicestershire, the likes of Worcestershire, the likes of Gloucestershire, they're not going to get the money from the likes of if they play Birmingham, Manchester, Leeds, Newcastle. They're not going to get the money, the lion's share of the money, because the bigger counties that get it, so say Southampton, Hampshire would get it, say Surrey and Middlesex would have to split it in half, but I'd probably say Surrey would get more because they've got the bigger pool, the bigger spending power. Notts would go to Nottingham. So you see all these smaller counties that will end up just dissolving because they've got a lack of money to even, it will get to the stage of upholding their facilities.
I just, what I can't understand is they use this constant reason, well, we're going to try and bring girls into the game, we're going to try and bring families into the game. It's not going to make any difference.
But that's already happening.
Exactly. You have T20 cricket, and don't get me wrong, T20 cricket has been great for bringing youngsters into the game, and I think everybody accepts that. However, this particular plan, for me, is just madness. They seem to be totally uninterested in test cricket. They seem only interested in white ball cricket. It's no wonder that players like Alex Hales and other players are signing white ball only contracts now, because there doesn't appear to be any plan to try and make test cricket the premium.
Yeah. They've probably been in the back of a bar at 11 o'clock at night, a few down.
I don't know how they come up with
this together.
Yeah, whoever came up with this idea, honestly, it really makes me angry.
It just seems to me that it's managed to disgruntle county players, some counties, and so on and so forth. I think you're right, Tim, about the unique selling point. It's got to be differentiated in some way. Not perhaps so much, because I'm sure Chris is quite right that the IPL, for what it is, and the Big Bash definitely have been huge successes. I mean, the Big Bash running directly opposite Test cricket in Australia is something that bothers me. But in the end, they're attempting with this unique format to protect the 18-team county T20 tournament, which might already be on its last legs.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And the ECB needed to have a bit more gumption and actually make a decision about which T20 tournament was going to go forward. Unfortunately for the ECB, the counties were not prepared to give up their particular part in T20. They wanted to maintain the money. I understand that. The money is not exactly easy to come by in cricket. And as Chris said, the smaller counties need that cash from somewhere. But we've ended up with this sort of hodgepodge plan, which doesn't really please anybody. And I really don't see how this is aimed any more at families than normal T20 cricket, which is what they're trying to claim this is. But I do find it frustrating. It's interesting, though, that I was reading that Rob Andrew, who's Sussex chief executive, has talked about now trying to bring in conferences to the county championship to try and create more of an even playing field, in his words. So that in that sense, they are trying to look at the county championship to try and structure that more, which is where they should be focusing it on, because that really is a dying championship. You look at some of the crowds at these grounds, and there's no one there.
We're kind of running two strands at the moment, aren't we? We started off with the county championship, and within 30 seconds we were talking about T20 again. Before we come back round to Rob Andrew and the idea of conferences and so on, which is of course germane to our own Surrey Slam, that's going to have four conferences. And four subdivisions within each. Before we do that, I think to me there are two elements of this 100, as I believe it's now going to be called, that slightly raise what's left of my eyebrows. The talk of simple scoreboards, that everything has got to be boiled down until we're sort of, I suppose, like the old tin numbers on the side of the third team field in 1971 when you put the score up every 10 runs and so on. But the other thing, and perhaps more pertinent, is the way in which MCC are saying, well, the laws of cricket are going to have to be changed to accommodate this, because 8 ball overs, yes, but there's no mention anywhere in the laws of cricket of 10 ball overs. And of course, thousands, probably hundreds of thousands, millions been spent on scoring software, which will be unable to handle 10 ball overs.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I just find it incredible. You know, you look around the world and you look, and Chris mentioned the success of the Big Bash and the IPL. These tournaments are really successful, and I can understand why the ECB are trying to replicate that, but this is not the way to do it.
No,
you know, you can't just junk the laws of the game. You can't just turn everything over and say, we're going to start again, because a few people have sat around a room and tried to come up with a gimmick, and which is all this is. It's purely a gimmick to try and differentiate. And you look at the comments that some of the players have made, and you know, you would have thought that the entire professional game would be behind it, but they're not. Yeah. Many of the players have said that they think the whole thing is a joke. I think one player said he thought it was an actual hoax when he saw the announcement.
Exactly.
I mean, that tells you everything you need to know.
You see all these county players that are going to go, oh yeah, because they're not at that level in terms of international and can go around and be a mercenary in 2020. They'll back against it. But you see, like, England Test captain Joe Root's behind it. He's probably because Straussi is giving him a nudge, please back this, because we need someone big to do
exactly.
it.
Exactly. He has to. Let's be honest. Joe Root, he's got to back it. You can't have if the England captain doesn't back it, then it's dead in the water before it starts.
Exactly. And the difference between the way, obviously, Australia and India do it and the way England do it, there's three things. You've got merchandising and marketing, that's one. You've got stadiums in use, because obviously you're not going to pack in, 35,000 into Taunton. Mm. That's why you've got, say, Old Trafford obviously packs in, but then you could have, if you had two Manchester teams, you stick one in Old Trafford, as in the football ground next door, because that's what they're doing down in Melbourne. They've got a couple of stadiums down there. And also, I think it's actually attraction of big name players, marquee players that are going to pull in crowds. They're the three things that have how they've made that a success.
David Gower actually said that he believes that it's come 10 years too late, and that had the ECB launched this at the start of the T20, then they could be competing with the IPL and the other tournaments. But because we've waited 10 years and now we've got the two tournaments, that it's a good idea, but it's 10 years too late.
Okay, I'm going to call a moratorium on T20 just for the moment, because there is an awful lot to talk about, and we rather wandered away from marginalisation of the championship. Mm. It occurs to me that the pitches, the way they've been, and the weather, the way it's been, really giving prospective England Test batsmen, and there are Test matches within about a fortnight of us sitting here speaking now, prospective batsmen have had absolutely no chance to display their wares.
No, well, that's right. I mean, the first Test is on the 24th of May, obviously at Lord's, followed quickly by one on the 1st of June. It'll be interesting to see how quickly players get the Pakistan players get the hang of actually batting on some of the strips, because it's going to be very different to what they're used to. And I was looking at the schedules today, and I couldn't see many warm-up games for Pakistan. I think they've just played Kent.
Yeah,
I've got a feeling I think that's finished as a draw, but I don't think there's too many warm-up games for them, so they're going to struggle, I think, to try and get used to the conditions, especially if that ball's swinging around.
You could even say with the England lads, they're going to have maximum two county championship games before they start. Stoneman got naught at the weekend. Cook got about 84 for Essex. I mean, that's a decent knock to hopefully get him back into touch, but they're going to get maximum two county championship games before they're thrown into that first Test of Lords against the likes of Amir and Wahab Riaz.
I wonder whether that's necessarily such a very bad thing. We seem to have gone from a never-ending England tour in the Southern Hemisphere, plus the Australia-South Africa series and everything that involved with, and subsidiary series in the subcontinent, straight into the IPL, where they seem to be playing twice and three times a week. And if not, they've come straight back into the championship in conditions which are really conducive to nobody shining. One way and another, it just seems to me that really and truly is an unjustifiable overload.
But the schedulers, I don't think they really care anymore. They're just trying to push as many games into that schedule as they possibly can to make money. We're playing Australia again, next summer. I think there's a couple of one day internationals pushed into the app against Australia as well. I don't understand how they make these decisions. You know, it seems to me they've lost sight of what cricket is all about.
And, of course, then in 2019, once the Cricket World Cup is over, we're going straight into a full Ashes series, and we learned this week that that Ashes series is going to be the very first series to count towards a two-yearly Test Championship.
Yes, I did. I read that as well. I suppose that you could argue that they're trying to make Test cricket, let's say, more competitive in terms of an actual World Championship. How that's going to work, I don't know. When I looked at the rules on how it actually plays out, it didn't look particularly straightforward to me. But I think any way that we can keep Test cricket going,
yeah, if you can get the likes of the West Indies back into the type of form they were back in, well, they're not going to get back to the 70s. They don't have the type of players at the moment. But that, I think that Test Championship is a good idea if you get it right. Maybe if you have like your two divisions, like you have like the top five, the likes of New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, England, India, Sri Lanka, top six, and then that allows to bring in these associate nations, the likes of Afghanistan and Ireland, which are improving massively.
I've got a feeling, and I'm trying to find the relevant information, but I have a feeling that the actual championship doesn't. I've got a feeling it doesn't include some of the associate nations. Yeah, here we go. So basically, competing in it will be England, India, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, Sri Lanka, Pakistan, Bangladesh and the West Indies. Zimbabwe and Ireland and Afghanistan, yeah. The latter of two who were most recently granted test status are not included. It's over a two-year cycle. Nine teams will contest three series at home, three away over the stipulated period, rather than all playing all. Points are allocated and the top two do battle in the final.
I think that's a bad and a good thing, because you've got Ireland and Afghanistan. They've just been granted...
They should be in that.
They've just
been
granted it, yeah. But then you've got the side of, if they get put into that, they could get a pasting every game. If you've got the likes of Kagiso Rabada coming up against Will Porterfield, swinging it around a bit and a bit quick.
But I think the reason they've not been included is not because they're worried that they're going to get beaten. They're worried. The ICC are worried that they will not generate enough income in those tests, because they'll be forced to play tests.
Who are people? There's not... Man and his dog will probably watch England versus Ireland or something like that. But it's different when you've got, like, England, South Africa, England versus Australia. But over here, whatever the test match, we always seem to pack out the grounds. Mm. If you go to India and you stick the Zimbabweans up against the Indian lads, man and his dog will turn up.
I think the one thing about that is that the Indian players are certainly keen again to play Test cricket, and Kohli is in the van of that, and a good thing too, I think. But you wonder quite how it's all going to pan out, and you're absolutely right, Chris, about attendances. But attendances are secondary to television money, aren't they, really and truly?
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, that's the Test Championship, which is not for another 15 months or so. In terms of Test cricket and the fact that we've got Ashes next year, let's just talk very quickly about prospects for England. Pakistan to kick the Test season off, a bit of an unknown quantity, Pakistan as always.
Yeah, I have to say I don't know huge amounts about the Pakistan squad. I read that Inzamam Ul Haq's, I think it was his nephew, has been included, which is quite interesting. We'll see whether he's, hopefully he'll play like his uncle, and that'll be quite interesting. But I don't know too much about them. I know that Riaz has been admitted, and Yasir Shah is injured.
I think that's the problem. That's your key world-class bowler. You've got a spinner that England don't have that can get wickets, keep runs down, and he's not going to be there. So I can only see an uphill task for the Pakistanis, because last time you came round, you had Misbah in his 40s, which is effectively still his prime. You got Yunus Khan, who scored 200-odd. And then now it's just gone...
Yeah.
Let me give you one name as far as Pakistan are concerned, and thinking back to the recent limited overs tournament that they play in between World Cups. Hassan Ali, who it seems to me absolutely thrived in English conditions in spite of being a Pakistani, I'm choose my words carefully, a man from upcountry, not from one of the big urban centres. So we'll see. Anyway, I've got 2 days at Lord's because I'm going to have to miss out on the West Indies. Time is absolutely flying. Let's spend a minute or two on Ed Smith as the new selector head honcho and Andrew Strauss embracing data as the principal means of guidance.
Well, we've had discussions about this, David, when Ed Smith was announced. I have to say, I quite like Ed Smith. I'm hoping that he'll bring something a little bit different to the role. What worries me is that he'll be the same as before. He's a very cerebral man. He's been a very good commentator on radio, and I don't know whether he's done TV commentary, but he's certainly been on radio. Yeah. So I think he'd be quite a good choice, but we'll see. I mean, I don't know. It remains to be seen how he actually undertakes the role. I'm hoping that he'll bring something different to it.
I mean, I don't know if I'm not offending anybody. It was like, sorry, who is Ed Smith?
Well,
he's played like one test match for England, hasn't he? Seems to be qualification to be national selector at the moment.
But don't you think that's the whole point, that Strauss has gone for somebody who's completely outside the circle and also somebody who has, like it or lump it, got a double first from Cambridge, and that says a lot about any individual. He's certainly an intellectual. He's been involved in psychology and one thing and another. And I suspect that that's the thing. It's appointing somebody from completely outside the cosy tent. Anyway, let's see what sort of side is picked by the time we're sitting here next month, and then we can ruminate a bit more on Ed Smith. And in terms of setting things right, and somebody who is definitely not from outside any tent, right hot off the presses, Justin Langer is the new coach of Australia.
Yes, I saw that. That was an interesting selection. He said he was very humbled by the by his appointment. You know, he's coming into a situation which we discussed last month, which is a tricky old situation in Australia. I guess he hasn't got a lot to lose because he's coming into a team which is, in many ways, in disarray. Yeah. So, I mean, he was a great batsman. I think from reading, he's had quite a decent career coaching. I think he was
Perth Scorchers.
And so he's got some sort of background. Whether he can put that into the test field, he's plenty of test experience playing, so who knows?
I think it's a very, I'd say, stable appointment for the Australian side at the moment, which they need. They don't want another brash character that could shake the pot a little bit.
Yeah.
I think the word you used was perfect for it, humble.
Mm. And you would think that Ricky Ponting will probably get involved in the limited overs stuff sooner rather than later.
Yeah, he would.
And I think you've got, I mean, I know Ponting may have had a wild youth, but he's one of the finest cricketers the world's ever produced. So that could go well. Chris, you've got about 60 seconds to tell us about Epsom pre-season.
Oh, wow. Well, we've had a couple of pre-season games. The ones got cancelled because it was too spongy, the pitch. The twos, we played Dorking, which is my team. We were chasing 178. It was a pretty decent effort, to be fair, but it was, we could have got them down to a little less. But we chased it. We looked like we're going pretty well at a time, but as typical Epsom fashion for every size, we collapsed to 118 all out. The threes on that day, 230 got put against them. They got bowled out for 75. And then the next day, we played the trust game, which we won. Our trust side won by about 3 runs in the last over, because Camberley, who had like a 10th-11 wicket partnership, were about 60. And we had a ex-Nottinghamshire county cricket player opening our batting for us and scored 70.
How's the ground going on?
Yeah, it's not too bad. It's getting there at the moment. It was a little too spongy a couple of weeks ago, but it's getting there. The inter-club game was played there last week, so the ones have first dibs on it this week against, I can't remember who they're playing.
Chris Jacobs, Susie's very own. It's time to ask you to vacate that hot seat this evening. It's gone very, very swiftly. We'll hope to get you in next month again, and if not, then you must come in and do a full three-hander, because you'll no doubt be watching the season from a distance across the water. Chris, always a pleasure, and we'll see you again
soon. Thank you, guys. Catch you later. Susie Radio.
Hello and a very good evening. Welcome back to On the Front Foot. My name's David Jay. I'm handing straight over to Tim Bowling now to introduce our next guest.
Well, I'm very pleased to say that we have a representative from the newly relaunched, relatively newly relaunched, Wisden Cricket Monthly. We have Ben Gardner in the studio. Good evening, Ben.
Good evening. It's great to be here.
Lovely to have you here. Now, before we start talking about the magazine, maybe you could just tell us a little bit about your own cricketing background.
So, my cricketing background is actually very minimal. I sort of got into the sport because of my friend Adam Mascarenhas, who he liked cricket and didn't have a friend who liked cricket, so would talk to me about it, but that was about the age of 13-14, and I fell in love with it watching it, but haven't had any coaching ever, and play occasional Sunday cricket, but mostly it's watching, listening and writing, really.
So you would probably describe yourself as you were a cricket fan who became a journalist, or a sort of journalist who started writing about cricket?
I think definitely a cricket fan who became a journalist. It's relatively new love. 10 years is still a long time.
Yeah, definitely.
It was always, that was the thing I wanted to write about, I think.
So how did you actually get involved with Wisden Cricket Monthly then?
So it started through Cricket Her, the website, which is dedicated to women's cricket, because I had an interest in that, and the Oxford Varsity match would involve some county players, so I asked them if they wanted a match report written, and that was around the time the Kia Super League was launching. So after I wrote that, they asked if I'd want to write some content around that, and when I met Raph Nicholson, who's the editor of that website and he's got a PhD in the history of women's cricket and has written loads about it, she suggested that the next step could be applying for work experience at what was then All Out Cricket. So I did that, and then sort of got an internship position about 3 months, and then just sort of stuck around after that.
Because I think the actual magazine itself, the team came across from All Out Cricket, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And it relaunched, when was it, back in, was it last November that it launched?
Yeah, with an Ashes special, yeah, so okay. That's in November.
And so, given the sort of length of hiatus, I think that the previous incarnation of Wisden ended around 2003 as its own title, didn't it? It merged with The Cricketer, yeah. And then obviously it's been away from a while. It was always seen to, I think it's probably fair to say that the Wisden Cricket magazine back in the day was always seen as the sort of less establishment type magazine compared to The Cricketer. Is that still the case with the new magazine?
I think to some extent we always like at Wisden Cricket Monthly to be sort of forward thinking and pushing forward. I think they're both good magazines. I think that The Cricketer probably does maybe focus more on historical things, whereas we like to, like, we probably have more interviews with current players, say, and we definitely like to push our causes. Like, yeah. We had a feature about the folly of the 10-team World Cup in the last issue, and we've got an interview with Rashid Khan in this issue, a big one, which is quite a nice thing. So I think we like to, we like to say, at least, to support the causes that we feel need to be supported.
So I think All Out Cricket came at cricket from a slightly different angle, didn't it? I guess that there must be that influence still within the actual magazine, with the amount of people that have come across from the old magazine.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's at all a clone of All Out Cricket with a different title, and we sort of recognise that we need to take a slightly different editorial slant, and that taking on the name Wisden comes with a certain authority and history that kind of has to be respected, and I think we do manage to meld the two together quite well. And I mean, it's sometimes it's just less of like the sort of punny jokes in the headline, and just making sure we have a focus on all aspects of cricket in every magazine. But yeah, I think that All Out Cricket certainly did that, and I think we've kept the good things about the spirit while also incorporating the Wisden.
I think your editorial board historically was always full of very well-known cricket names. Who's on your current editorial board?
I couldn't list all of them off, but I know that Lawrence Booth, who's the editor of the Wisden Almanac, is on there. Lizzie Ammon, who is the cricket reporter for The Times and probably watches more county cricket than just about anyone. David Lloyd is on there.
Does somebody like David Lloyd take quite an active role in the magazine, or is he there as a sort of sounding board to try and bounce ideas off?
I think he's someone, all these people are people that we can go to whenever we want to, sort of. So, and David Lloyd, actually, he's been more involved than a few of them, actually did a column for us over the Ashes, and it's the kind of thing whenever there's something that might concern them, you'd go and talk to them about it, about how they might go about things. And if they read the magazine and had a suggestion, they'd always be able to phone us and make that suggestion as well. So I think it's much more than just an honorary title. It's like they are involved, I think.
I mean, do you think in this digital world, especially with sort of websites like Crick Info, you think there's still a place for a paper magazine? Well, for any sport, but for cricket, say, you think that there's still an actual market for people that want to buy an actual physical magazine rather than reading stuff online?
I mean, I certainly hope so.
Yeah.
And it's a challenge. It's a different thing to have to put together. You can't focus so much on what's going on right at the moment. For example, we don't have match reports in the magazine because we think by the time it actually comes out, we've got that week between going to print and actually coming out, that it's going to be sort of almost irrelevant. But I do think that actually, especially in cricket, it's got a place because there's so much time within the game to read and reflect that people are going to want to read about it. And there is just something really nice about having a physical copy of something that you can make look really nice and have as like a sort of to you almost like freeze a moment in time in cricket each month and have it set there and then have it going on. So I do think there is a place, and that there's something special about putting together a magazine, which you don't get from the slightly more reactionary way you put together online. You get to take stock and look at it.
Presumably you have a digital version of the magazine on your website as well.
Yeah, that's available to buy. We also, wisden.com is actually, it's quite different to the magazine in that there are the match reports on there. It's different content. Like we've been using CricViz to analyse the IPL, and CricViz are a statistics company.
Okay.
It's quite different. So yeah, you can get a digital magazine, but also wisden.com is worth visiting even if you don't want to pay any money, because there's lots of worthwhile content online.
Do you think websites like Crick Info have had a big influence on publishing, especially in the time that Wisden Cricket Monthly has been away? Lots of things have changed from a technology point of view, from point of view of, well, in terms of cricket as well. But do you think Crick Info has had a real influence on cricket publishing?
I think so. I mean, they're definitely the biggest name in cricket journalism, and they're the ones that they are who you sort of look to and you try and not emulate, but you're recognising as a website, especially that you're competing with them. Like we've been developing our scorecard functionality on our website, and it's always looking at Crick Info, how they do it, how we can do it differently, and have points of difference to them. I guess Crick Info also, they had a huge influence. They were early champions of women's cricket, as World Cup Cricket wasn't. They sponsored one of the early World Cups, so I guess they've driven things forward in that way. I don't know how much they influence the publishing of the magazine on a day-to-day basis, apart from, if they have a story and it's something that we want to explore in more detail, that's something we might do. But it's, as a magazine, I don't feel like we're competing too directly with Crick Info.
I mean, you mentioned women's cricket there. I guess that is one of the main things which the women's game was much smaller in the previous incarnation of the magazine. Now it's obviously massive. That's something that Wisden Cricket Monthly will be focusing on as well, I assume.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't really know if I'm allowed to say, but I guess I will. But so I mean, it's not really a big deal now with women having been on the cover of the Almanac. But next month we're going to have a cover featuring, I think it's Heather Knight, Danny White and Nat Siver, with interviews with the three of those, which should be really nice. But, and yeah, I mean, through Wisden Cricket Monthly, we've always had a big interview with Anya Shrobsole a couple of issues ago, looking back at last summer and her, especially focusing on her thoughts and feelings through that day and that tournament, and onwards. And All Out Cricket, we are always champions. We had a women's special absolutely ages ago, and we've sort of carried that on. And it's something that, I mean, the Almanac, I think, could rightfully be criticised for its lack of coverage of the women's game up until this year.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're making up for it this year, aren't they?
Yeah, right? I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's long overdue, I think.
So, I mean, it may sound like an interview question now, but I was going to ask you what you thought the sort of unique selling point of Wisden Cricket Monthly was. If somebody said to you, why should we buy Wisden Cricket Monthly, how would you answer? It is an interview question.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I mean, I think... because I didn't subscribe to All Out Cricket before I started working there, but I think now if I got fired or whatever, I think I would subscribe to to Wisden Cricket Monthly, because I think that if you love cricket, I mean, firstly, there's a phenomenal team of writers like Phil and Joe, the editor-in-chief, and magazine editor, are both like some of the best cricket writers going around, and it's really the only place to read them do their thing completely fully. There's an amazing team of columnists. We've got, I mean, Kumar Sangakkara writes a column for the magazine. He's been picking out his Legends of the Game each month, which is amazing to read. We've got a really lovely section at the back, Golden Summers, which looks at the history of the game. So one person writes about their golden summer when they got into cricket, and then we have a bunch of other features. I think there's something in there for every cricket fan, really, and it's the best writers in the game interviewing some of the best players in the game. In this issue that's just gone to print, we've got exclusive interview with James Anderson and Stuart Broad looking back on their 10 years, which is really nice. It's done by Dean Wilson, who knows them quite well, so he's got them to speak quite freely about the highs and lows. And then we've got an exclusive interview with Mohammad Amir as well, which is obviously a big deal, because he doesn't speak to many people.
I guess that's the thing, isn't it? But having the gravitas of the name Wisden behind you will open doors, won't it, to cricketers and people around the game, which perhaps other magazines without that name maybe can't get access to.
Yeah, perhaps. And I think it's partly also, we always just try and make sure we've got interviews with those players as well. I think it's something that you kind of have to work quite hard to get them. Sometimes you'll have to be emailing people or trying to move your own schedule around and going travelling really far to get these interviews, but it's something we're always really focused on as well. Like, yeah, it definitely does help having the Wisden name attached, but I think our dedication to it and the fact that we've done so many good and positive interviews about players in the past means that people want to talk to us, and the editorial team, Joe and Phil especially, have such good relationships with the players that it's almost like the players themselves are on the end of the phone just because they get on with them rather than anything else.
I mean, do you have time, as a journalist, you're trying to put together the magazine, do you have time to read other cricket writers' stuff outside of work to get an idea or maybe get influenced with types of styles of writing of other writers?
Yeah, I think it's quite essential to do that, really, and it's a...
Do you have any particular favourites that you like reading?
It's a good question.
Put you on the spot again, haven't I, really?
No, I mean the problem is that a lot of the ones that are my favourites they're not employed by the magazine, but they're freelancers that we use. So Jeff Lemon and Adam Collins are two Australian writers who I think have done really good stuff around the ball tampering scandal and beyond. Who else is there? It's tough because so often you read things.
I quite like, and I've mentioned this before on the show, but I think Chris Tremlett, as an ex-player, he writes for City AM, and his columns are actually very insightful, and he says what he thinks. I think he's a very good writer, so it does prove that a lot of these ex-players can write very well. But I mean, you mentioned the ball tampering saga, shall we call it? We won't talk too much about it because we covered it in quite a lot last month, but just wondered what your sort of thoughts were on that particular incident.
Well, I guess it's a question of where to begin, really. It's I mean, I think clearly there was something wrong done. I don't think anyone's disputing that, and it's then becomes about how bad was it. And there's obviously, when you compare it to other ball tampering things, which people have done, they've said Faf du Plessis tampered with the ball and other people have done it, and it's clearly different to those because it's done in a much more brazen way and because of the cover-up afterwards. But then you look at the mental state of the players going into that match, especially Steve Smith. I think he'd spoken going back 3 months, I think, about how mentally fatigued he was, about the fact that he doesn't really sleep during test matches, about that his batting was being affected. And when you have someone who wants to win so strongly, that it's going to, you can see how that could creep into someone. And it is partly perhaps representative of an Australian cricket team that's allowed itself to sort of get into bad habits in terms of these sorts of things over a long time. I mean, Justin Lang has just been appointed the Australian head coach, and there's footage of him in a test against Sri Lanka, I think, walking along and flicking off a bail, at which point Ricky Ponting appeals for a hit wicket dismissal. You know, it's not...
Yeah, it doesn't give the right message sometimes.
And I think, they'd been... Magellan had just signed a big sponsorship deal and then had pulled out, and I think they were, in some respects, fall guys for generations of Australian, like, bad behaviour, but must also take responsibility for actions which weren't acceptable.
I suppose that's part of the benefit of having a magazine, that you can analyse these particular stories and actually have a proper insight into a viewpoint or insight into what's going on, rather than everybody these days online reads information, South Crick Info and various other websites, and it's just, these are the stats, this is the report. I guess with Wisden Cricket Monthly now, you can actually go in depth into more of these types of stories and maybe look at them from different angles.
Yeah, and I think it also, when you have that time, a bit of time after the incident has happened, you get to look at it with a bit more perspective and things, because people, it's completely natural that you have to write something as soon as something happens, because otherwise you're going to miss the boat. But also, that means you're going to be reactionary. Whereas that issue actually was, it's still one of the most reaction we've done, with having that on the cover, that particular issue. And I mean, there are a couple of other things that had gone, some ugly things that happened in cricket that month. There was some bad blood between India and Bangladesh in a tri-series they were playing, and the other stuff, not just the ball tampering in that Australia series. So we were able to have some really strong voices, like Lawrence Booth wrote a column for, or well, a whole feature for that magazine, as did Jeff Lemon from Australia, and a couple of others who were able to look at it with a bit of hindsight and a bit more time to sort of digest it all and write really considered and well thought out pieces, I think.
And I think that's what people are looking for, I think, when they're buying a magazine. They're not necessarily, they don't just want quickly a report that's there, you know. So, well, I wanted to ask you also, I was going to ask you your favourite and least favourite cricketers to interview. We don't want to slander anybody, so we'll just say, who's been your favourite cricketer to interview?
It's a good question. It's always really the ones, because I mean, if there's someone who's famous and you sort of build yourself up for it, it's almost inevitably going to be a little bit disappointing, I think. So it's almost always the ones who you can get a quite a bit of time with, and then so there was a piece I did about Leicestershire in their title winning years of 96-98, and I got to just sort of talk to people like Paul Nixon and David Milnes, and that was really lovely because they shared such good just insights into that thing. And I think actually the first big interview I did was Geoffrey Dujon.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And he's just obviously the coolest guy, and I think I told him when the interview started, this my first interview, and he was like, just relax, take it easy. and then I did, and then it was really nice talking to him about his career, basically.
Well, he was obviously a legendary player, and we've spoken about the West Indies on this programme many times, and I have, having been brought up in an era when the West Indies were the number one test side, it's very sad when I see their sort of fall from grace, but I don't know if you've got any questions you want to sort of add, David.
Ben, I would just like to add to Tim's welcome first and foremost, but something that we haven't talked about since you've been here, and something we're going to talk about in the next hour, because we've got two representatives of two local clubs coming in, is the grassroots. I wonder what the reincarnated WCM's attitude to and coverage of grassroots cricket is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, we have a really comprehensive, it's called our Your Game section, and we've got in our editorial team Rich Evans and Ed Kemp, who they're both the website editors, I think. They're both club captains and care very strongly about the game, and but actually another member of our team, Josh B. Cook, is also a club captain, and Rich has been writing, I don't know how he keeps coming up with all these ideas, but loads of amazing articles about issues that affect the grassroots in particular, like what's happened to families and club cricket, why aren't they involved anymore, how will the new laws affect the game. There's a lot of things. Unfortunately, not being a player myself, I actually find them really interesting, the things he writes about, but I can't remember what they are. So we have that, which is like a monthly thing, and we also have a few more jovial things. We've got a secret diary of a club cricketer. We have Scott Oliver, who is one of our regular contributors, does a thing about the heroes of club cricket. It's called Club Cricket's Hall of Fame, about players who've done amazing things, like across 20 or 30 years in a club season, have amassed incredible records. So I think we're very supportive, and we were early ones to be reported quite a lot on All Stars Cricket when it started developing, and just had, we've got an interview with Matt Dwyer, who was the mastermind behind that, in the issue that's just gone to print. So we're looking at the grassroots and the issues affecting it, and also trying to be hopeful, I think, and looking at the history as well.
Okay, so that's one element of the grassroots. Let me ask you, in view of the fact that schools cricket is now pretty much confined to the independent sector, and I wouldn't dream of asking you to speak for your august board, let alone your editor-in-chief, but is the attitude to schools cricket at your publication that it's ever so slightly elitist?
I think there is the attitude, yeah, that especially the coverage of it and the things you hear about it tend to be that way. And it's something actually that we've never focused on too much, the publication, partly because it's difficult to access the stories and to make sure you're giving it a comprehensive review. We'd rather not do something than not do it well. I think we had a meeting on Monday when we talked actually about the issue of schools cricket, one of the big questions was how we make sure we're not just going to the main public schools, Eton, Harrow, and getting players from there, but are getting into as the ECB are trying to, getting into the schools in the inner cities where there are so many talented cricketers, and finding out what the stories there are there. And one of the things we thought was liaising with Chancellor Shine, who we've done a lot of work with before, and going and with their street schools programs, and seeing some of the main stories from them and highlighting them in the magazine. It's not something we've come to a complete decision on how we're going to do it, but it is something that the coverage of and the entire game is sort of elitist. You look at the percentage of public schools that provide, or sorry, the percentage of cricketers that come from public schools, and there's no way to deny that it's not, I think, the game as a whole, and therefore the coverage as well, I suppose.
That's not to say that there isn't some extremely fine cricket being played by cricketers like Alistair Cook at Bedford or whatever. I think the question of balance cuts both ways a little bit with that. Anyway, far be it from me to interfere further. Tim, you've got about 3 minutes.
Well, I wonder whether, Ben, you might want to give us give the listeners an idea of cost of buying the magazine, when the next issue's out, what's in that particular issue.
Right, yeah. So the cost is £4.95, I think, and you can get from most good news agents, certainly Smith's, trying to get into a few other places as well, or you can get it online if you go to wisden.com. Then there's if you click on the top right, that'll take you through to somewhere to buy it, or if you go to wisdensubs.com, you can take out a subscription, which I think is £29.99 or £39.99 for 12 months. I'm not entirely sure on that. And the next issue comes out next Wednesday, so we went to print yesterday, actually. And it's a really nice one. I mean, they're often a bit tough to do, these ones that are sort of near the start of the season, but it's come together really well. I think we've got, as I said, we've got the Mohammed Amir interview where he talks about, his obviously the big low in his career, but the role that English cricket played in building him back up, and the good that came out of it. The Stuart Broad and James Anderson interview that I mentioned as well. Kumar Sangakkara has he talks about Virendra Sehwag, which is really nice. Henry Blofeldt writes about his favourite summer in cricket, which was 1947, the summer of Edrich and Compton, which is fitting, and Compton's 100th birthday.
Yep,
would be this
that's
month.
Right, yep.
There's loads that's regular as well, like Jonathan Liu has a regular column, and he's the independent chief sports writer, and he writes about the side of Compton's legacy that we don't see, and the perhaps slightly murkier side of it, which is really interesting. I can't mention the Ed Miliband thing. there's plenty to read and enjoy, and I really would say just get a copy and try it once, and if you don't like it, I'll buy you a coffee or something.
Well, we'll take you up on that. We've got about a minute, or just under a minute left to go. What do you think of England's prospects this summer against, first of all, against Pakistan?
Pakistan, I think we will beat them, I think. It'll be 1-1 or 2-0 to England, I think. They drew last time and they had a management team then, but it's a team on a downward ebb at the moment, and I think that could see England England well.
Okay, well, Ben, thanks ever so much for joining us tonight. It's been great for you to come down here and chat about Wisden Cricket Monthly. Hopefully the listeners will go out and buy the magazine. But we would we'd stay in touch, and we'd love to see you in the studio again. But thank you ever so much for coming down.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Ben, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us on the front foot from Susie 103.4, where we're approaching our halfway mark. Welcome to part two of On the Front Foot, our cricket chat show here at Susie 103.4. I'm delighted to say that we're joined now by a very good friend of Susie 103.4 and a guest previously on the show, John Colcutt from Newdigate Cricket Club. Good evening to you.
Hello, David. Hi, Tim.
Hello, John. Nice to have you back.
Thank you.
I suppose we might as well cut straight to the chase, because we've got an awful lot to cover this evening. And, John, I must ask you first, how are your table tennis exploits proceeding?
Well, we've had a slight hiccup. I'm scheduled to be playing in the World Championships in Las Vegas in June, and my shoulder went on the 1st of February, and I've got lots of people working on it, and I've had jabs and manipulation, and just last week, definite improvement, so I'll be there.
Well, we wish you absolutely every success with that.
Thank
and
you.
Las Vegas, you mind what you're up to.
Will do.
Is Tina
going? Sorry, is that the voice of experience?
I'm afraid never been nearer to Vegas than Seattle, I think. Is Tina going along to keep you in check?
Of course, yes.
That's okay then. And speaking of Tina, let's get down to Newdigate. Let's get down to the Brocas. What's been going on in the winter, John?
Good question. As far as the cricket club is concerned, with our new building, we've now got other groups attending there. There's obviously the Scouts and the Beavers and the Cubs, and we've got Pilates group. We have a yoga group and one or two other groups. And you mentioned Tina. She started a table tennis club up called Keeping Active. Do you like the word?
Keeping?
Well, we managed to get funding from something called In the Loop, which Table Tennis England has introduced, and we managed to get two tables. We managed to purloin two more, and we're aiming at people who perhaps think I'd like to play table tennis. Not a great high standard, but people have come along. Our good friend Andy Meads brings the robot, and we have balls flying all around the place, and people are definitely improving. And it's people, we've got people with perhaps onset of dementia and so on, and because table tennis is an amazing sport for not combating, but if you play it all your life, very, very few table tennis players actually get dementia. So there have been big studies in Japan, and it's a proven fact. I think it must be the eyeball coordination and the active the nature of the game.
That's really interesting. What's the cricket club been up to during the winter, John?
Not a fantastic amount. Trying to recruit. If you want a game on Sunday, Tim, we're playing the Bushmen, which is a lovely game from the BBC people. And a lot of preparation, obviously, for the season, but everything's been curtailed because of the weather. But the ground is looking an absolute picture now. I left it this evening. We had girls training for the Surrey Youth Games. We had two nets absolutely full with people training, and there were the beavers chasing around, so it was a picture of first summer at last.
It is a lovely ground. David and I were down there at the end of last summer, and we spent an afternoon just sitting. It was a lovely sunny day, you may remember it, John. We had a drink, and I think for anybody, even if you're not interested in cricket, if it's a nice sunny day, to go down to Newdigate Cricket Club and just have a drink at the bar and sit out, is there's not many nicer places in the world, I think. It was lovely when we went down there.
Tim, I think that the cream tea that John and Tina kindly provided for us that day was probably the beginning of my even further slide into not keeping fit, but there we are. So does the slope help or hinder, John, when it's been so very wet in March and April?
The bottom part of the ground is fairly wet. The top drains very, very quickly, and most of the square drains pretty well. We could have played 2 weeks ago, but we had an away game which we managed to play. Then it rained and rained and rained, so we lost last week. But Tuesday we managed to get an under-12 game played, and then it rained all Wednesday, but this weekend should be fine.
And I suppose at least you've got the club season stretching on into the Colts club season stretching on into midsummer, which takes a little bit of the pressure off these early weeks.
Yes, that goes on to the first league game, so we haven't lost any league games. We have lost training session and one training session last Friday, but it normally finishes by the end of July when people go off on holidays. So we have half of April, May, June and July for training. And we've got five teams in the East Surrey Colts League. And we are hoping for more people to come. We do the All-Stars, you know about the All-Stars. Yes, we did that last year, 38. Not so many this year, but there's plenty of time yet to sign up. And we also, to say, train the girls for the Surrey Youth Games.
So just remind us, John, I'm sure my compadre here will want to ask you about the prospects for the season and fixtures, etc., etc., but just remind us about the level that Newdigate plays at, the division they're in.
Well,
and so
we got promoted last year, so we're in the Premier of the Fuller's League, and we've got two teams. Unfortunately, last year we couldn't raise a third team, suffering like most clubs with the retention of young players. No problem getting lots and lots of youngsters playing cricket, but by the time you get to the age of 14, the dropout is quite dramatic. And then I think the youngsters have got so many things to do, and playing cricket all afternoon and part of the evening. If they work one day as well, they want to do other things on the other day. And of course there's the opportunity of travelling, and so many will go off in the summer and do a lot of travelling. So cricket isn't the cricket club for most youngsters. It's no longer the centre of the universe.
Do you have I can't remember, you may have told us last time you were here, whether you have a T20 side that plays at all.
We are in the new slam.
Yeah.
So,
well, we had was it Matt? It's Matt, isn't
Matt,
it? Matt,
yeah,
Camp.
That, yeah.
He was on last month, actually chatting about it.
He's tremendously enthusiastic, yeah. And he's got a lot of clubs involved. But 2020, I know Wasim Khan from Warwickshire is a great advocate of 2020. But you have to bear in mind, if you've got 100 kids, there's only going to be 10 out of that 100 that 2020 suits. Mm. In other words, it's the big hitters. So you're going to immediately switch off a lot. So you've got to be able to provide all types of cricket, and maybe a shorter version of the game might be a possibility, I don't know. But certainly we've entered that, because and I've got no doubt at all that that'll be a great success.
I think there's a tournament that they're running in Surrey this season on a Sunday, called the WYSL, and it was previously called the West Surrey Youth League, but it's not just for youth, it's for adults as well. And I think they're going to be operating, it's 30 overs a side on a Sunday, which I guess is getting more towards a sort of halfway house between 20 over cricket and 40 or 50 over cricket.
Yeah, you see, what's actually happened is that when I was playing cricket as a youngster, it was a 2 o'clock, 2:30 start. Mm. So you had the morning and lunchtime. So you then went off after lunch and you played cricket, and you probably then finished at 7:30, have a couple of beers in the bar, and then go home. So it wasn't such a big thing. But now, with sort of 1 o'clock start, teams are expected to get there early for training. You're virtually taking out, say, from 12 o'clock to 9 o'clock, so you're taking 9 hours. And I think this is something that is probably a bit of a problem.
Mm. The first 11 are in the Premier League of the Fullers.
Mm-hmm.
Your second 11 are in which league?
They are in the second division of the second division,
yeah,
of the second team.
Yeah. And what do you think are the prospects for both those sides this season?
I think they'll do well, because they beat two Premier Division sides to get to the Cup final last year.
This is the first.
The first team.
Yeah.
The second team, it's all about availability.
Yeah.
When we field a good side, then they would have won the league.
Mm.
Don't think there's much doubt about that. They're a very good side. But if you turn up with nine players, because you've got people dropping out night before, or you've got a lot of people unavailable, it becomes disheartening for the regulars as well, and it's quite difficult.
You said it was a struggle to get the third 11. I think that's the case for many clubs at the moment. I know my own club, the third 11, unfortunately folded at the beginning of last season.
Yes, I know.
Mm. Do you think that there's a possibility of a third 11 ever coming back at Newdigate, or do you think it's just a case of trying to concentrate on keeping the first and the seconds going at a competitive level?
Well, Tim, I'm always an optimist, and I like to think that would happen.
How long ago was it you had a third 11? Was it relatively recent?
Last season.
It was last season. Yeah.
Last season we didn't have a third 11.
Right.
Yeah.
But the previous season you'd had one.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they are very good for bringing through the Colts.
It's perfect, and I think Sunday cricket has the same the same possibility. Our Sunday fixtures are very much the traditional cricket of wandering sides come long established. People stay, they love their cricket, they play in a lovely spirit, and they stay and have a drink afterwards.
Yeah.
And so we try and cater. I mean, I've always been a fan of league cricket anyway. I just think it just adds something to
it. Do you, what sort of social events are coming up in the near future at Newdigate?
And we've got a quiz on the 12th, and we are looking at quite a lot of things. It is an ongoing thing. For instance, with our juniors, which is on a Friday night, we serve hot paninis, and that goes down extremely well. The mums and dads stay, so on a Friday night the place is absolutely packed. And Saturday we're getting more food. We've got Martin and Jill Earp now back behind the bar. They're very get up and
now
go.
They used to run the Six Bells, didn't they?
They did used
That's
to run
right,
the Six
yes.
Bells.
I remember Martin, yes.
Well, Martin had a dreadful accident.
Oh, did he?
He fell off a ladder and he fractured his skull, and he was in a coma for a long, long time.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And, well, I went to see him at St George's Hospital, and I was there for 2.5 hours, and he'd no idea I was there. But he's made a remarkable recovery. He's working full-time. He's got his driving licence back.
Right, okay.
And it's really great to have him and
so he's
and
behind
Jill,
the bar at the
and Jill as well.
Yeah.
So they make a really good pair. And, you know, that warm welcome.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with them. They were great. When they ran the Six Bells, they were brilliant. Yeah. Because that was when I first moved to the village. I remember going down to the Six Bells the first time, and he was, you know, very welcoming, and it was great. He was really, really good.
And you know, this is a big thing. I went on the Safe Hands course yesterday at Chessington Cricket Club, and one big thing about safeguarding and so on is actually part of their incorporating into the course is trying to make the club more welcoming. Mm. What do people want? A nice, warm welcome, comfortable. And lots of things on the wall and cricket memorabilia and stuff like that. What we have done, we've managed to get funding for artificial grass on the balcony,
okay,
which would look really, really smart. And that was on the ECB small grant scheme.
Right, okay.
And I don't know if you're aware, but I think they had... Well, for Surrey, every single applicant was granted their money. And there wasn't enough money for all the applicants, but money was found from various different sources, and the Surrey Cricket Foundation, I think, contributed towards it. And so absolutely everybody who put an application in actually got money.
Mm. Yeah, it is so important, isn't it, to encourage the grassroots. Well, we know that you have a pretty thriving social scene, John, and it sounds as if the wheels have been fairly well-oiled during the winter, and it's all going to go from... Strength to strength and cream tea to cream tea.
Well, we hope so, yes.
We touched on recruitment. Have you had any successes, any interesting new players thus far?
No, there's a certain person in this room who lives in Newdigate, you know.
Ah, well, okay, present company accepted, but you're fishing in an increasingly small pool.
Well, we were very fortunate last year in as much as... in the last couple of years, two people moved very close by who actually came to us and said they wanted a cricket club, and they were regular cricketers. One was first team wicketkeeper, Dave Arnold, and a person that I used to play against, Dave Wrightson. He's 10 years younger than me, probably a bit more, 15 years. And he moved to the village, and he plays regularly for the second team and topped the averages for the second team last year. He's a good player, and so he's a good asset. So, yes, there have been one or two other new players that are at first team level. But as I said before, it's the key thing is the really good juniors. I added there 30 names of players who are decent cricketers who should be playing cricket, and not one of them is playing.
Mm.
And that is the problem. And I know the ECB recognise it, everyone knows it.
Yeah, that's an ongoing difficulty for you, isn't it? Can I just change tack slightly and ask you about the first 11 fixture list, given that you've secured promotion? Any particularly interesting or exciting new fixtures for you there?
Well, the one thing is we're going to do have even more travelling. Mm. And we've got to go to Battersea Ironsides.
I thought they were in the Surrey Championship, rather than the Fullers.
No, we're playing Battersea Ironsides.
Oh, okay.
Whiteley Village we're playing this week. So, but it's always nice to be playing against different sides. So, so we're looking forward to the challenge, which will be nice.
And it's home and away and 40 overs. Is that it in your league?
No, it's home and away. Half the games are timed matches, and half are limited overs, which I think is ideal.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, I think it's a great shame when a lot of these leagues are looking to move away from time cricket. I think it's very important that that youngsters especially get the feel of playing time cricket and understanding draws. I mean, we've said it before. I'm sure you know, when you play in certain games, some of the best games you can play in are the games that end in a draw. And there's not necessarily a result at the end of it, but you're one team's batting out for a draw, whatever. And I think it's very important that the Colts especially get used to that type of cricket.
Well, you've always got something to play for then, haven't you? And in a way, this is the drawback of 2020. I used to play many years ago, David might remember, it was a competition called the Decca Cup. And that was played after work, and it was 2020, and this is in the 70s, and it died a natural death simply because there was too many predictable results. So you're 40 for 5, you're going to lose. You might as well pack up, go home. And if it's the other way around and the side gets a massive total and you lose 3 quick wickets, again, you might as well pack up and go home because you can't. But if you could battle for a draw, then it's different. So that is, again, I'm not going to say the bubble will burst with 2020, because it's here to stay, and it's vital for the income of cricket. I mean, there's no question about that. But it's I don't think it's for everybody, and it's not the panacea either.
John, I wonder, just thinking about the Decca Cup, it occurred to me when I was ruminating on the Surrey Slam that we've already touched upon, there was also, of course, the East Surrey Six-a-Sides many years ago. Wheels do get reinvented, don't they?
They do, yeah, Six-a-Sides, and who plays single wickets now?
I can remember the first couple of seasons when we had a spare Saturday at the grammar school, long before you were involved. We ran a single wicket competition. We struck a trophy for it, and it was an absolutely magnificent day from about 11 till 7. It was great fun.
It's a magnificent day for the people who are doing okay. If you get knocked out first round, you spend all day fielding, it's not so great. And I fell in that category. So.
Yeah, I suppose also that's more the case at club level when you've got a limited pool. In a school, you've usually got quite a lot of cricketers who don't mind coming along and fielding for a couple of hours. Tell me, John, what are Newdigate going to be called in the Slam?
Newdigate Bobcats.
Right, so non-alliterative, and more power to you for that.
And why are they called Newdigate Bobcats?
Why are they called Newdigate Bobcats,
thank you,
John?
Thank you. Because it's sponsored by Bob Shop.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say that, actually. So is Bob going to come down and watch then?
I sincerely hope so. His son will be playing in it.
As far as we understood it from Matt Camp, it's going to be 4 16s split further into 4 4s. Do you know?
I'm not completely sure of it, but I will pop along and have a watch.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah. John, before we perhaps widen the discussion out, we'll have 5 minutes to talk about cricket in general. Is there anything else at Newdigate that you'd like to tell us about?
Yes, I don't know if you've looked at our website, but we really suffered a dreadful tragedy. And our chairman, my cousin, Mike Cooper, died on St. George's Day. And Mike was... he lost his wife only 10 months ago, so I call them children, they're obviously adults, but they've lost their mum and dad in 10 months in not great circumstances. They were became very, very ill. But Mike, after he lost Norma, a spark went out of his life, no doubt about that, but he was very supportive, he and his wife, of Newdigate Cricket Club. Mike, going back, was a very, very good sportsman. He was he swam for the county, played basketball for the county, and was a very, very good cricketer. He was also a chess prodigy at that time, taking on 10 people at a time. So he was an all-round great sportsman. He was an excellent cricketer, a good off-break bowler, a good hitter, and he He then skippered Carl Shorten in their glory years in the 70s when they won the League and Cup and were a real force to be reckoned with. He became chairman of the club, chairman of the Slazenger League, and then he came back and played a little bit for Newdigate before he retired. We appointed him as chairman, and it gave him a real spark, and he was cricket through and through. And this is what was going to be a great thing. He had many ideas, he recognised what the problems were, and he attended one committee meeting with lots of ideas, and that was it. So a tragedy for his family, a tragedy for me, because we grew up as brothers and we've been close, and a tragedy for the club. So we've got to put ourselves up. He would be rooting for us and get on the field of play and start playing again. So we really started with we're all feeling quite down at the moment,
under a bit of a cloud, John. Yeah. Any plans yet for any kind of memorial match or anything else by way
Not
of a memorial?
No, it's all very raw at the moment. The only thing, of course, we've had to do is to call DGM to find another chairman.
Well, I'm really sorry to hear that. Yes, under a cloud a little bit at the start of the season, but let's hope the clouds will part and the sun will shine and there'll be some...
Well, the sun shone today and he would have been pleased about that.
And there'll be some success for the first team having been promoted. We've got a couple of minutes, John, and it occurs to me that what I'm going to ask you about next would mean absolutely nothing to our final guest, because he's in his 20s and you and I no longer are anywhere near that particular age bracket. Our previous guest was talking about the fact that Dennis Compton's centenary falls in this month, and I wondered if you'd any memories at all as a lad. It just beyond me, really, more by word than having seen him. Wondered if you'd any memories of Dennis Compton, or indeed of Colin Bland, who we lost last month as well.
Right. My dad spoke about Compton, because Compton and Edrich, they just went together, and I think it was the summer of 1948 that they just scored 1,000 runs, and he was flamboyant. I can remember him, it was the Brill Cream Boy, I think.
Yep.
So he was probably one of the first cricketers to sort of get to advertise nationally. My dad said he was a wonderful player, terrible caller between the wickets, but a really great player. And of course, he then nurtured successive Comptons who have been successful cricketers.
Indeed. I did see him in black and white televised games, the John Player 40 over tournament that preceded any other sort of Sunday formal cricket, the Rothmans Cavaliers it was called. And I mean, Dennis would have been in his 50s by then, but he'd still got it. And I also vividly remember being at a 40 club dinner when it was still at the Hilton in Park Lane, and it may even have been his final public appearance, and 600 people in the ballroom all stood and applauded as Dennis limped his way across to the...
He was so popular, wasn't he, at the time?
Yes. Well, I suppose Keith Miller and he were an antidote to those dark days after the war as much as anything. Did you ever see Colin Bland? I saw him on television.
I don't think I did. I think I saw him on television, and he was the first real super Derek Randall stroke Jonty Rhodes super fielder. Now, of course, everybody's like it, but in those days he was exceptional.
Stood out. They happened to televise Kent versus the South Africans at Canterbury, and it rained, and they stuck him in a net with a camera, and he hit the single stump 10 times.
Well, I think he was doing fielding drills back then that are now standard that nobody ever did.
And
I think,
really?
Yeah, and I think there were lots of people that would watch him do his warm up drills, as you say, throwing at a single stump and various other drills, and just thought, what's he doing? But that's how he became such an amazing fielder.
But you mentioned Compton as they were very, very big characters. Things again have changed. Go back about 3 years ago, I had 20 kids, and I held up a picture of Ian Bell, who was our premier bat at the time, and not one single person knew who it was. Now, when I was that age, and you put a picture of Peter May up, or Ken Barrington, everyone would know who it was.
Yeah.
Yep. I suppose the other sobering thing about that, John, is that neither Dennis Compton nor Keith Miller nor anybody would have got away with any of the things that they did off stage these days.
Oh, no way. Turning up to a county match in evening dress because I hadn't been to bed.
Which is tabloid fodder, clearly.
But didn't Keith Miller, what, didn't he have the story when he was asked about the pressures of cricketers, and he says, cricket is no pressure. Pressure's having a Messerschmitt up your arse.
That's right. absolutely right. And of course Bill Edrich flew with Bomber Command as well.
Yeah.
So yes, different times. John Colcutt from Newdigate, it's a delight as always to have you with us here at On the Front Foot, and we hope that we'll see you again really soon.
Great. Good to see you.
Thanks, John.
Welcome back to the final part of On the Front Foot, Susie Radio's cricket chat show this Thursday evening, the first Thursday of May. We'll be back on the first Thursday of June, but now it's my pleasure for this final half hour to welcome back to the On the Front Foot studio Laurie Nicholson, who is now the new captain of Merstham Cricket Club up the road. Laurie, good evening and welcome. Very nice to see you.
Evening, David. Thanks for having me again.
Absolute pleasure, and we've got lots to ask you about as far as things are going up at Merstham, but I suppose the question that's on everybody's lips as far as the club game is concerned is the extent to which the weather has interfered with your pre-season preparations.
Yeah, so funnily enough, I've actually just been at the ground this evening and it is still very wet. We were due to play last Saturday as well, and unfortunately that was called off. I'm hopeful with a bit of sunshine over the next couple of days we could be okay for the weekend though, so fingers crossed for that.
And is the pitch in reasonable nick in spite of the weather?
I think so. I think the problem has been that obviously they haven't had much access to the pitch. I think it was cut yesterday, which is great. It looks okay, but I think that some of that preparation they would have hoped to have done hasn't been able to take place. So we'll see what it looks like on Saturday.
Might not be a 200 and large batting wicket then, and maybe no individual 150s first outing of the season.
Probably not.
That's right. You mentioned Ian Lamont just now. I was talking to Ian. He was reminding me about all your statistical personal successes last season. But tell us, Laurie, what's been going on during the winter as far as Merstham cricket's concerned?
So it's been relatively busy, to be honest. We've continued to run our net sessions at St Bede's School. So we had 10 sessions over the winter starting in February, which was great. A really good turnout, and we also had a few new faces there, which is always nice. In regards to the first team squad, I think it's been more of we have lost a few sort of important players over the winter months. We've also gained a few, so I think we're shaping up to again be quite a competitive team, which hopefully we'll find out on Saturday.
Want to name any names among your recruits?
So I suppose the number one recruit, as it were, would probably be the fact that we've managed to keep hold of Noman, who I know we spoke about when I was last on, is really like an integral part of our team. And there was a few moments where we thought he might be off, or he was returning to Pakistan as well, potentially. So he's a massive plus to have him in the team. And then we've also got some people from various members of the team's work friends and university friends who are coming on board. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's good. And what's the attendance been like at Winter Nets? I know Sundays can be a bit difficult.
Yeah, varied, I'd say. I think we usually get a good turnout. It's just sort of what that distribution is between the teams. It does vary from one week to the next. Obviously, a lot of our first team players are based in London as well, which makes it a bit more difficult. But like I say, there's usually a good turnout there.
Which league are you in this year? Which division are you in?
So we're again playing in Surrey Championship Division 5. Okay. So when I was last on, I was talking about our first season we had in the Surrey Championship, which was great. I think we did ourselves really proud, managed to sort of secure a mid-table finish and finish a season really strongly. So definitely feel this year that we've got a great chance to sort of push on.
You think there's a chance of promotion?
I don't know. Yeah, I think it's something that we'd all love to push for. I do think we'll probably take the first sort of half of the season, first quarter of the season, and see where we're at. But I think that sort of run of results at the end of last season really has given us confidence, and it's something that if we can replicate some of the cricket we were playing, then we've got a great chance.
That said, you've had a fairly meteoric rise with those successive promotions.
Yes.
I suppose there's no harm done in consolidating for a season or two, although I would imagine that there's not a great deal between sides that have been promoted into your division from below and sides that are coming down from above.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's something that I suppose actually surprised me last season, is there doesn't really seem to be any way you can tell what standard the teams are going to be. So I think looking at the table last year, I think definitely one, if not both, the teams that ended up being relegated had come down from the league above the year before. Likewise, ourselves and Merrow, who got promoted, both finished mid-table. So it's definitely one of those, like I say, where you need sort of 5 or 6 weeks to sort of see how the table's lying, and you get a good idea of which teams are strong this year and which teams maybe not. So it's one of those. I think we've got to see how we get on, and like you say, if we do consolidate for a year, it's probably not the worst thing in the world, but I think everyone's got ambitions to keep pushing.
And which sides have come down, bearing in mind that from Premier League football downwards, it tends to be these days that once you get on the slippery slope, you can do a Sunderland or a Bolton easily, Wanderers or whatever very easily.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like you say, so from our perspective, we went up 3 out of the last 4 years, I think. And likewise, teams have almost sort of done the reverse of that. Off the top of my head, I think it's Alain have come down. One of the promoted teams is Old Pauline, who we've got on Saturday as well. So, there's been quite a lot of movement, and I'm looking forward to see how they compete and see if they can sort of try and replicate what we did last year as well.
It's fascinating to me with the longer historical perspective. 40 years ago, you would have said that Old Paulines were one of the top clubs in South West London, and Merstham Cricket Club was a village side playing in a meadow behind Quality Street. It's amazing how things do change, and I suppose that's all come about with the structure and the possibilities of league cricket. So any standout fixtures or any big rivalries, Laurie?
I wouldn't go as far to say a rivalry. I think we've had a few interesting games with Merrow, who I mentioned before. Obviously, they were our rivals in that promotion year, and we did manage to just pip them to the league title. So it's always a good game against them. And again, Chertsey, who narrowly missed out on promotion last year. We've had some really good sort of run-ins with them, so I'm looking forward to playing them again this year.
And the format you're playing, I know we were talking to John earlier about Newdigate, and they play half-time matches and half limited overs. Is that the same for you guys? Yeah.
Yes, so we start the season limited overs. The middle section of the season is time games, and then you've got the 50 overs, limited overs at the end. So it's kind of sandwiched between two blocks of 50 overs.
And in terms of the other sides you're putting out, you've got how many Saturday teams?
So we're running 4 Saturday teams.
4, wow.
Yeah. We've got 2 teams on a Sunday, one of which is involved in the Development League, so it's a great chance for some of the younger players to come on board.
Is that the 30-over side league?
It's 40 overs.
40, okay, 40, that's a different one. Yeah, okay.
And with the coloured kit and the orange stumps and balls, so it's good fun. And like I say, a great chance to give some younger players a chance.
Are all 4 Saturday teams in leagues?
Yes, so the first and second team are both in the Surrey Championship. Yeah. The third team, I believe, are in the Fullers League. Yeah. I'm not quite sure which league they're in this season. All playing sort of competitive.
That's impressive league to have four league sides put out on a regular basis.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think, obviously, the success we've had, I know the second team have had a few really good seasons in a row now, so it feels like there's a lot of interest, and a lot of those sort of core players are managing to stay on board as well, which is great.
And the Colts come through the thirds and fourths, do they? They play in those teams?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's what we try and do. Again, like I say, a lot of the Colts play on Sundays as well, which is great. They get sort of a taste for adult cricket. But the junior section in general has been thriving over the last few years. So I think, off the top of my head, we're running 11 boys teams now, and there's I think over 150 junior members, which is great for the club. And if you're ever down the club on a Friday night, you can just see how sort of successful that whole enterprise has been.
I suppose you've also had this influx over the last 3 or 4 years of yourself and your peers very much in one age group, and if I may say so, really from one or two sources at maximum. I suppose there's a challenge awaiting down the line for those of you who are approaching your middle 20s now, in that domestic bliss is going to rear its head at some point, and I wonder if that's where 50-over cricket starts to become a bit less attractive.
Yeah, well, I think you know the individuals you're referring to, and I don't think domestic bliss is anywhere too soon on the horizon. But yeah, it's something to think about. I think it does help, like you say, when you've got a good group of mates, as it were, who are all playing the same team, and it really builds that sort of team spirit as well.
Clearly, where you are now is the result of long-term planning way back when, and I think it's always important to be looking at the medium term and beyond rather than just the immediate. We were talking to Lewis Hatchett from East Grinstead towards the end, I think possibly when they just won the championship,
yes,
Tim, I'm not sure.
Right. Yes, it was, yeah.
But,
yeah.
But very clearly, Lewis and his age group there, older than yours, had gone the route of involving the wives and girlfriends at every possible opportunity,
yeah.
And in fact getting them to organise as much as they possibly could so that everybody was going out together even after a full day game in the Sussex Premiership, and that as we understood it was built very much, Tim, I mean people spit about Down Under after recent events, but clearly Lewis Hatchett and his brother were hugely impressed by the whole model of Australian great cricket.
And having played over there, they brought back many of the concepts which weren't necessarily going on in cricket at this, say, club level in England, brought back those things, and it obviously made a huge difference to East Grinstead Cricket Club. So it was good that they were to bring those back over here.
Merstham got a team song, Captain?
Not currently, I don't think.
Let's switch in that case to the to the Surrey Slam. Now,
yeah.
You've got a ready-made handle for the team for the Surrey Slam.
Yeah, so we've already got a nickname, which is great. I think looking at some of the teams, some of them are maybe a little bit more desirable than others. It's nice to have our own ready-made handle that we've been using. And yeah, really looking forward to it. I think it sounds like a great format. I think it's a really good idea. And yeah, more cricket, so I think everyone's a winner.
Old Emmanuel Rumdog Millionaires. Well, probably that needs to stay the other side of the A3 at Blagdon's. As I understand it, Laurie, there's going to be four conferences, if you like, involving 64 teams, and they're going to be split down further into to groups of four. Do you know who you've got in your slam group?
I'm trying to remember.
Don't worry if you don't. Because
I think South Nutfield's one of them. For sure. I'm not 100% certain of the other ones.
And there is some flexibility in arranging fixtures over a 2-week period.
Yeah,
as
you have a window,
it.
Yeah.
I suppose you mentioned earlier on the fact that a number of your peers, your age group, are in London. We've had my compadre the other side of the desk paddling under the water like mad to get from Sutton Station to Nutfield Road this evening. Is that likely to have an effect on 20-over evening cricket, or will it maybe not be played in the evenings?
I think it probably would for our team. If you took our team, it certainly would. But again, I think the aim of this competition as well is to maybe try and introduce some people who haven't been playing cricket for a while, who are local, who I suppose maybe want to get back into the game. So hopefully we can find a blend between the two. And if there are, like you say, some people who can't necessarily make it on the weeknights, I suppose it opens opportunities for others, which is great.
Absolutely. And maybe even for youngsters, because it seems to me that with 64 clubs participating, it is going to be about the taking part as well as the competitive.
I think that's the irony, isn't it? We were talking at the top of the show about that. Well, I mainly was sort of criticising T20 cricket, but I think T20 cricket at this level at club cricket, the Surrey Slam is a great example, is exactly what club cricket needs to try and get people involved. It's all well and good saying we need to get youngsters into the game, but you want people playing it, and T20 cricket is perfect for evening cricket, for bringing people in. And you mentioned it earlier, David, 50 over cricket is very difficult when you're all of a sudden maybe newlywed or have young kids and stuff. It's very difficult to commit to an entire day's play, so I think the Surrey Slam is an absolutely fantastic idea, and I think hopefully by the sounds of it, everybody, the guests that are coming in here, everybody's involved with it. I think it sounds like it's going to be a great tournament.
So Merston Magics, and we're not really sure yet to what extent we're going to be able to get involved in slam matches or whatever. We'd like to think that the show may be able to reach out in some shape or form, but not quite sure what. So we'll await developments on that. Now, in terms of getting those all important people into the club, Laurie, what have we got as regards standout social events at Quality Street this season?
So we've always got some things planned. There's always stuff going on. I think, in fact, this Friday we're running a quiz and curry night, which should be good. Obviously, in conjunction with the usual juniors training sessions, which are always popular with parents as well. We do run sort of regular quiz nights, like I say. I think we may have a race night on the cards as well. And plenty of sort of impromptu barbecues and things that are great to sort of, I suppose, get all the different teams together and catch up on what you'd hope would be a good day's play.
We spend a lot of time talking about equality in the wider world. It's always seemed to me that cricket is such a brilliant promoter of equality in many, many ways. And the fact that you've got your quota of players whose families originated in the subcontinent must lend a certain authenticity if you're having a night when you've got subcontinental recipes and so on and so forth. I say that because I spent an afternoon freezing my bits and pieces off at Cherry Lane in Langley Green, where Crawley Eagles play. I was there watching Burgess Hill at the very beginning of the season a couple of years ago, and the club there doubles as a community centre, and if you want your curry off the buffet, you can have that at tea time. It's absolutely marvellous.
It's funny, isn't it? They do that at Westcott Cricket Club as well. They have the local curry house, does all the cricket teas, so for every cricket tea the curry house comes down and you have help yourself to the Indian buffet, so it's lovely.
And I think it's absolutely, you know, we said this, didn't we, to Nav when Nav was here 2 years ago. It just seems to me that there's all this dreadful shenanigans at the moment in Parliament and politics and race this and race that, and cricket is just such a magnificent leveller and promoter of egalitarianism.
Yeah,
I think it's great. So anything else you need to tell us by way of news from Quality Street, Mr. Nicholson?
So I think we've covered most of it. I think obviously everyone's very excited for the season to start. Ian did make me aware that we have a commemorative 2020 game against Banstead scheduled for later in the season. So I think it's early August the 3rd, I believe. Banstead basically have reached out to us and they want to host a game to commemorate some of the players who played a final match before the First World War at the Ring, which we currently play against Redhill Cricket Club. So I think they're looking to do something around that. It would be a 2020 game on an evening, I think Friday, which should be great and nice to connect with other clubs in the area as well that we don't normally play against.
Yes, indeed. Well, Banstead, a fine club, long-standing. They've not had it all their own way in recent seasons, but an absolutely top club. And it's interesting, isn't it, that we've now reached the centenary of the armistice. And, well, you never know. You'll have to keep us in the loop with that, because we might, well, we certainly put in an appearance, but it would be lovely to think that maybe, just maybe, we could actually do something with the show. Mm. So we'll see how that goes. Jolly good. And the fact that you're operating four sides at Merston, Tim at Leatherhead and John at Newdigate struggling to get third teams out.
Exactly.
I think it speaks volumes for your strategic planning. Well done for that. And let's hope the sun shines and we can all get really stuck into the season really soon. Let's think a little bit about the wider game. We've got 5 minutes. Tim, we've been talking about the slam quite a bit. Laurie, have you got any views on the 100 and 10 ball overs and stuff like that?
Yeah, I suppose I think my initial reaction to it, I didn't really see the benefit of it, if I'm perfectly honest. I think it seems like the 2020 game is already quite popular, and I know they've got obviously plans to sort of expand that and maybe get some more sort of marquee players in. So I don't know if it's maybe a case of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Mm. But that said, it's always nice to see something new, and I suppose if they are going to go down that route, then I'd probably sort of reserve judgment till I've seen it in action.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair enough. We talked quite a bit of this with Chris over there at the top of the show. I notice, I don't know, and we're obviously not going to get into criticism of individual players, but I notice that Owen Morgan is yet again going on record on television and in the press as effectively saying that Test cricket is dead and so on and so forth. And yet he can't even get a gig at the IPL any longer.
Yeah, funny that. I think it's difficult. I saw the quotes he made about the 100 ball competition, for example, and I think to a certain extent his hands are maybe tied somewhat. But yeah, I think it's an interesting time. I think obviously the purists out there are hoping that Test cricket remains relevant, and I think it certainly will do, and I certainly hope it will do as well. But it's going to be a very interesting sort of 5-10 year period for cricket, and I think on the one hand, if it's getting new people involved and it's getting sort of interest peaked, then all for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose what's most important at our level is the fact that, as we've already mentioned tonight, you've got the business of a split between 50-over declaration cricket and or 50-over cricket and declaration cricket. Yep. And maintaining the two, I think, is so very, very important. And we do talk an awful lot about orange balls and orange stamps and T20 and so on and so forth, and changing the scoreboards around. Now, I can recall, it wasn't when you were here, Laurie, but we did talk somewhere along the line, it might have been in that very first season, about the fact that Merstham does disabled cricket but isn't so strong on the women's front.
No, so interestingly enough, having again spoken with Ian, I think it's something that we've seen a lot of interest, especially over the last sort of 12 months. He was telling me, I think there's been a number of initiatives where cricket's been included in schools, sometimes even taking the place of more traditional girl sports like rounders, for example. And yeah, I think it would be a great thing to sort of look into further. I suppose if the interest's there, then I'm sure the club would be happy to sort of provide that.
Well, that's excellent, and I think it is the way things are going, and I'm all for it. We had women's cricket offered as a USP for Wisden Cricket Monthly earlier. I'm not sure that's actually quite the case, but there we are. If we were to ask you, Laurie, where you see yourself and Merstham round about the 10th of September, what would you say?
So I think it's going to be a very interesting year. I think, like I said when I first came on, if we could replicate what we did last year and maybe even sort of a token improvement in the table would be great. I think if we can sort of maintain opposition and play some more good cricket, that'd be excellent. If we can push for promotion, if we can try and get up there and compete, then that'd be even better. So I'm quite open-minded. I think I'm just really keen to sort of see how the season goes, and hopefully we can reassess sort of mid-season and see where we're at.
I've never seen age as any sort of a barrier either way, frankly, whether it's a venerable age or a very young one. But tell me how you're viewing the prospect of the man management and the tactical strategy of First 11 cricket.
Yeah, so I think specifically on the first part of that question, we've got some interesting characters in the team, and like you say, across varied age groups. I'd like to think some of my closer friends from school, I've got a bit of an idea how they tick and how to, I suppose, get them motivated and things. But yeah, it should be fun. I think it's something I'm looking forward to as well on a personal level, sort of taking on that challenge and seeing how I get on.
Do you think you've got a go-to in a circle, or is that not the way it works at Merstham?
I suppose so. I think the way the team has sort of changed over the last two or three years, there's still a core of players there, all who are sort of very supportive, very experienced players who've played a lot of cricket. So they'll always be happy to help. And I think it's probably going to be a case of sharing ideas and sort of working out as we go along in some aspects.
That's good. And you're still local yourself at the moment, although you did tell me you're thinking about having a little bit of experience up in the Big Smoke.
Yeah, I don't think any time in the too foreseeable future. I think one of the main virtues I have as captain is being able to get there early and open the clubhouse up. So might leave it till the end of the summer and we'll see how we go.
Yeah, I have very vivid memories of being out of bed at 7:30 on a Saturday morning all those years. I was at Hartswood and places before that, and somebody's got to be there.
That's the thing, there's so much that goes with it, isn't there? As being first 11 captain, it's not just managing on the pitch, it's the whole thing. You're going down, as David said, checking the pitch out, opening up the clubhouse, probably dealing with queries, different things. So there's so much that goes with it. So it's a big job, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think at the moment, being local, that's really helpful. Yeah. And I'm sure there's going to be, like you say, a few things that I haven't quite realised are going to rear their head throughout the season.
You know, you clearly enjoy the game, you clearly love the club, and I think when you have those two attributes, I think it just comes naturally, doesn't it, that you want to help and you want to try and move the club forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when they sort of asked me to do that, I was obviously delighted that they considered me. And then, yeah, you're right, once you sort of think about it and you think, how can I help out, how can I sort of contribute, because there are sort of a small number of volunteers who put a lot of time into the club, and it is nice to sort of, I suppose, if you feel like you can help out in any way to do that. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Laurie, we've got about a minute to get your take on England through the winter and prospects for this coming summer.
So yeah, interesting summer for England as well, I suppose. I'm looking forward to the Indian touring party coming over. I think it does feel like a bit of an important summer in terms of the direction of the team over the next few years. There's a few, I suppose, older players who might be on their way out, and obviously a few spots up for grabs as well. So it should be an interesting summer.
Well, let's hope so. I think everything's in the melting pot, Tim. Mm,
yeah, definitely. It will be very interesting to see how England sort of bounce back after what's been a pretty abysmal winter, I think. I mean, I don't think we can do much worse than we did, but let's hope that things are on the up for England.
Any final thoughts, Laurie, from Quality Street?
I promised two of your regular listeners that I'd give them a little shout out. So if they're still listening and they haven't switched off after me droning on, Mark Robson and Ben Snelling. Good evening, chaps, and I hope you enjoyed.
Benjamin Snelling, now there's a name to conjure with. Laurie Nicholson, captain of Merstham Cricket Club, we wish you every possible success in the coming season, and we'll look forward to having you on again in due course.
Absolutely, thanks for having me.
Tim, always a pleasure.
Yes, been great tonight. What great guests we've had tonight yet again.
And we've got to do it all over again in a month's time. You've been listening to Susie Radio's Cricket Chat Show for the month of May. This has been On the Front Foot. And our guests tonight, our very own Chris Jacobs. Great pleasure to have Ben Gardner here from Wisden Cricket Monthly. And then our two local men, stalwart, well, he's Mr. Newdigate, really, John Colcutt. Always brilliant to have John on the show, and Laurie most recently. We will indeed be back in a month's time on Susie 103.4.